From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, yep, those open lines. Here's what's happening. A very strange story from NASA. It seems that 40 years ago, after Edgar Mitchell performed his moonwalking duties with Apollo 14 mission, he took a lunar movie camera home with him, one that he tried to auction in May. Mitchell's lawyer says that he received permission from NASA to take the camera. Now, the mention of the word lawyer might lead you to conclude that, well, there could be a problem here. Indeed, the U.S. government, on behalf of NASA, has reportedly filed papers in court to prevent the auction from happening and to have the camera returned back to NASA. Mitchell's lawyer says, look, objects from the lunar trips to the moon were ultimately mounted and then presented to the astronauts as a gift after they helped NASA on a mission. NASA is saying that it has no written record of the transfer of ownership, that it should have the camera back. Now, the camera would fetch between $60,000 and $80,000 at auction. That seems like a drop in the bucket to NASA. Well, first of all, let me say this. I know Edgar Mitchell personally. I've known him for over 14 years, ever since he wrote his very special book, The Way of the Explorer. I've been to various conferences with him. I've sat down next to him and had dinner. I find him to be a very honorable man. He risked his life for this country when he went to the moon on Apollo 14. If he says NASA gave him permission to take the camera, I believe him. I have no idea why NASA is fighting and battling over this. It just seems ludicrous to me. Our science advisor and head of the EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland, thinks, well, maybe there's something else going on here. He said it is very strange indeed that Edgar Mitchell still refuses to acknowledge seeing anything unusual on the moon, and that's true. Edgar's told me personally that all he saw was rocks and boulders and craters and things. So who knows? What might have been on the camera? Who knows indeed, too. Richard, of course, goes on and on to say that this is a very strange situation indeed, and I agree with him. But for the bottom line here, NASA should walk away from this and let an American hero have his movie camera. My gosh. The fire threatening the Los Alamos nuclear weapons laboratory spread overnight to nearly 104,000 acres or 162 square miles, making it the longest in New Mexico state history. The Los Alamos National Laboratory is closed because of the fire, but the crews remain confident they can keep the blaze from spreading to the lab and the rest of the town. If you send kids to college, you know how much it costs, right? Well, the Department of Education has listed the 5% of colleges that hiked their tuition by the largest percentages over the last 3 years. The new listing is part of an effort to make college pricing more transparent to young people. Northern New Mexico College, Georgia State University, San Diego State University, and Florida State College at Jacksonville topped the list with tuition increases hovering around 50% since 2007. I'd send my kid to a different school if I were any parents about ready to contemplate going to those schools. General Motors and Ford said that their U.S. sales rose 10% in June as lower gas prices for that month brought more customers into its showrooms. A shaving razor, that's right, made from a meteorite metal and sapphire blades has gone on sale. Forget this, more than $100,000. It features solid white sapphire blades, which the company claims will last forever. I'd rather buy the disposable ones myself. Although most people who have come close to death say they remember nothing, around 10 to 20% later report that something did happen. That something is often a near-death experience. NDEs are relatively common. Gallup poll published back in 1982 led to an estimate that 12 to 15 million Americans personally experienced a NDE, which was about 5% of those surveyed. There is some controversy as to how to define a near-death experience, and what really happens on the other side. In a moment, Dr. Jeffrey Long joins us on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about the other side on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Dr. Jeffrey Long, of course, has been to Coast many, many times. He's a physician practicing radiation oncology More than 10 years of research have gone into Dr. Long's study of more than 2,000 near-death experiences. He is one of the world's leading near-death experience researchers. Here he is back on Coast to Coast with some groundbreaking experience studies. Hey, Jeffrey, how are you?
I'm doing great, George. It's a pleasure to be back.
My pleasure, too. So tell me about some of this new work. What have you been doing?
Well, I've been keeping very busy. Ever since my book came out in 2010 with some of the groundbreaking research that I'd done up to that time, we've just been flooded with new near-death experiences. So as a result of that, we're having more and more material to study than ever possible before. Now with over 2,000 near-death experiences, we're more confident of some of these remarkable new findings than we were ever able to be before. So it's certainly an exciting time in the near-death experience research arena.
Is there some controversy here, Jeffrey, in terms of is near-death experiences, is it happening? Is it real? What's on the other side? Are scientists fighting that?
Yeah, there's always going to be questions, and I think that's very legitimate. I can tell you from my perspective, as a physician, I go over every single near-death experience shared with my website, and absolutely, virtually all the people that have a near-death experience are absolutely fully unconscious and most clinically dead at the time they have their experience, with no spontaneous heartbeat or respiration. So these people are truly near death.
Let's go through the definition that we all think is a near-death experience.
Sure. Got a fairly straightforward approach to defining near-death experience. Two components. First component, near death. As I said, they're so physically compromised, they're unconscious, they may be clinically dead. They're so close to death that if their physical condition doesn't improve, they'll suffer permanent, irreversible death. And yet, at this time, when they're unconscious, they may be comatose, they may be clinically dead. At this time, George, when it should be absolutely impossible to have a lucid experience, yet they do. At this point in time, they have that experience part of the near-death experience. And while no two near-death experiences are the same, when you look at many near-death experiences, as I have and other researchers have, you see a very consistent, organized pattern of elements that we see over and over.
Well, that's a good point. When people nearly die, what percent do you think have these NDEs?
As best we can tell, the substantial majority that have that close brush with death actually do not have a near-death experience. It's only about 10 to 20% of people that nearly die that have a near-death experience. And we don't know why that is. We can't prospectively pick out people based on any characteristic, demographic variable, prior belief. We absolutely cannot predict who will have a near-death experience when they nearly die or what the content of the experience will be.
In your book, The Evidence of the Afterlife, you talk about the nine lines of evidence. What are they, Jeffrey?
Sure. One of the first ones is that during a near-death experience, they actually have crystal clear consciousness. Now, don't forget, this is occurring at a time they're unconscious. I mean, if you look up unconscious in the dictionary, it's very clear, no conscious experience possible. And yet, at that time, generally, near-death experiencers' level of consciousness and alertness is actually higher than their earthly everyday life. And that's absolutely medically inexplicable, George. Now, another interesting line of evidence is that one of the common elements of a near-death experience is an out-of-body experience early on. They see ongoing earthly events. They often describe in vivid, and I might add accurate detail, their own resuscitation, the struggles of their healthcare team or others to bring them back to life. And in my research, I found that what they're seeing while unconscious or clinically dead in that out-of-body experience is almost always 100% verbatim accurate when they check on the reality of it later. And then once again, is absolutely impossible unless they were actually seeing what they described that they're seeing at a time when it shouldn't be happening at all.
Okay, what else?
Well, you know, certainly there's heightened senses that occur. They can seem to have better vision, better hearing, and in fact, remarkably, there have been case reports from people born totally blind to whom vision is unknown and unknowable, and yet during a near-death experience, those born totally blind are able to have highly visual, highly detailed near-death experiences. And of course, that's medically inexplicable. During my research, in my previously published book, I did the first published series of near-death experiences occurring during anesthesia. Now, under the blanket of sleep, of being under general anesthesia, of course you shouldn't have any possible conscious awareness. But if your heart stops beating due to a complication of surgery, anesthesia, or from the accident or illness that resulted in emergency surgery, for example, I found that the near-death experiences at that time, which should be doubly impossible under anesthesia and with your heart stopping, not only absolutely do near-death experiences occur at this time, but the content of near-death experiences, including the degree of consciousness and lucidity, is absolutely the same as near-death experiences occurring under all other circumstances. Again, another remarkable line of evidence for the reality of near-death experiences.
Does it frustrate you when mainstream talks about the brain and that a lot of these are directly related to the brain, and they try to pan it off on that?
I think with the increasing evidence we have, it's a lot more frustrating now than it ever was. I mean, good gosh, George, think about it. Your heart stops while you're under general anesthesia. That should be doubly medically inexplicable to have any kind of an experience of any kind. And yet this is the time they're having typical near-death experiences. So I think with the multiplicity of lines of evidence, not just by me, but by what other researchers are coming up with, I think now more than ever we can say with some degree of certainty that near-death experiences are absolutely beyond anything that medical science can possibly explain. And in fact, what's even more frustrating with the skeptics or the physicians or scientists that try to explain away near-death experiences, they've come up with over 20 different skeptical explanations of near-death experience, and the reason that there's so many explanations is very simple. There's no one or several skeptical explanation of near-death experience that makes sense even to the skeptics, and so they keep coming up with new ones. I'm sure we'll be up over 30 eventually.
Absolutely. Now, what do you mean by perfect playback?
You know, that's what the phrase I like to use to describe the very interesting part of near-death experience called the life review. About 15% of near-death experiences will see portions or even all of their prior life. And these can be very dramatic parts of the near-death experience. I mean, can you imagine unconscious or clinically dead, and yet there you are having a panoramic review of all of your prior life? And in fact, some of the deeper life reviews involve not only seeing or being aware of your prior life, but you actually feel the emotions of what you felt during life. And remarkably, a number of near-death experiences report they actually felt the emotions, the feelings, if you will, they understood what the person that they were interacting with throughout all of their life was feeling. You can imagine what a great wake-up call and quite a learning process that is for people to have this type of experience. Near-death experiencers generally look upon it as being a very positive, helpful lesson, if you will, for them to learn how to learn the rest of their life and how their actions in their everyday earthly life affect other people.
Family reunions, pretty common, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Family reunions is a good way to describe what happens when near-death experiencers encounter their deceased loved ones. Most of the time, it's family members, but there can be friends, spouses, people that they knew in their earthly life who died. And yet there they are in their near-death experience. And what's dramatic and very consistent in near-death experiences is that even if that individual died as a result of a chronic, debilitating, or disfiguring illness or accident, essentially always when they're encountered in these family reunions or encounters during near-death experience, they're essentially always picture-perfect health. Of course, these reunions are not ghost-like or haunting or scary in any way. These are joyous, sharing, loving reunions with those that they loved on their earthly life. Again, very dramatic. And another part of what, to me, helps validate the reality of near-death experience is virtually never in a near-death experience do they encounter living people, people that they would have been at the forefront of their consciousness. Say the banker they did business with that day, their family member that's alive, they said hi to in their house on their way up to the bed before they had a heart attack. And yet, virtually all the time, in spite of the fact that you think about or recall the people that are most familiar in your recent memory, that's not what happens during near-death experiences. The experiences are those that previously died.
Do you find that children's experiences with NDEs are different from adults, or are they the same?
And that's the surprise. When I set out to study experiences, I wanted to have the sternest research criteria for doing this that I could, so I selected very young children age 5 and under. Well, George, as you can imagine, children that young are practically a culturally a blank slate. Death is unknown and unknowable to children that young. They have very little religious understanding. They don't understand death. They've almost certainly never even heard of a near-death experience. In fact, in my study group, the average age was 3.5 years old. So these are some quite tiny toddlers. And yet their stories are just gripping. In looking at over 24 of these very young children's near-death experiences, I found their content was absolutely identical to the near-death experiences of older children and adults. Absolutely no reason to believe that even among these very, very young children, that there was any influence in any way about the content of their near-death experience from any other external source.
What about worldwide to that consistency as you talk about your work?
You know, that's one of the really interesting parts of my study. My website questionnaire for near-death experiencers has been translated into over 20 different non-English languages. So as a result, I'm doing by far the largest cross-cultural study that's ever been possible in the history of the world. And to my somewhat surprise, as research results came in, the conclusions were unavoidable. And that is, no matter where in the world you live, whether you're a Muslim in Egypt, a Hindu in India, an atheist in Iceland, no matter where on earth you are or what your background is, the content of near-death experiences are strikingly the same. And that's based on hundreds of near-death experiences we've received all around the world.
And after effects, what do we mean by that?
You know, personally experiencing a near-death experience is a huge event in anyone's life. And so as a result of that, there are typical changes that occur following a near-death experience. Now, George, these take an average of about 7 years to fully manifest in their life, but when they do, they are dramatic, and I might add, very consistent, too. Now, as a group, near-death experiencers over time have a much lower fear of death. No surprise, they face death, and they have an understanding of what happens after death, and that's an afterlife. And of course, they have a greatly increased belief that there is an afterlife based on their own personal experience. They have an increased belief in the reality of God. They become much less materialistic, become much more loving, much more valuing of loving relationships in their own life, and they'll seek them out. Over a period of time, the changes they go through may cause them to change jobs, it may cause them to change relationships, but ultimately these near-death experiencers over time become much more happier, much more loving, much more wonderful people.
Jeffrey, as you look at all of these specific points about NDEs, are you totally convinced that it exists, that there is life after death at this point?
And that's the fact. That's an excellent question, George. Based on evidence which I just shared with you, and even more additional evidence that has come along, I am absolutely convinced that there is an afterlife, and I'm talking about a wonderful afterlife for each and every one of us.
Well, let's hope you're right. I've always wondered, Jeffrey, just wondered, what if it doesn't exist? It's all over. And that's kind of a dark, sad thought.
Yeah, but George, that thought that you described, that concern if life is all there is, if when we die it's over, I think every single person that walked this earth has had that doubt, that concern, that anxiety, that worry. And that's what's so exciting about this near-death experience research. Near-death experiences provide, perhaps, at least in my opinion, definitely the strongest evidence that we don't disappear, we don't end when we physically die. No question from the evidence of near-death experiences, absolutely consciousness can transcend unconsciousness or even clinical death. Certainly some of the strongest evidence we have, and that indeed, when it comes time that for all of us to face the grim reaper, there's going to be a life beyond that, a wonderful life, the existence that many people have described as heavenly, and I think that only starts to describe what the afterlife is like, as described by the near-death experiencers themselves. A tremendously powerful message of hope for all of us.
Well, and you, as you mentioned, heavenly. How many people experience this so-called spiritual phenomenon at the moment of an NDE?
Yeah, and that's what's interesting to me. A substantial percentage of near-death experiences describe entering unearthly realms that are so beautiful and majestic that the term heavenly, even as dramatic as that word, seems to hardly do it justice. For example, in near-death experiencers, they may encounter cities that are far beyond Earth in their beauty. There may be other beings there, These are loving interactions when they're there. They may encounter landscapes, mountains, meadows, and yet the colors they so typically describe are beyond anything on earth in the beauty of the colors that are on the other side. They may hear music when they're on the other side in these heavenly realms that is so beautiful it has no correlate with any music that they've ever known or could even conceive of during their earthly life. So,
and I'm hearing music now too, Jeffrey, so that means we got to take a break, and we'll be right back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, we'll take your phone calls with Dr. Jeffrey Long next hour. Then we'll follow it up with open lines for the rest of the night here on Coast to Coast AM. When we come right back, we're going to talk about deathbed visions on Coast to Coast AM. Jeffrey, tell us about deathbed visions. What are they?
Well, sure, George. Deathbed visions are what I consider to be part of the spectrum of near-death experiences. These occur, as the name implies, when people are literally close to dying. They may be minutes, hours, or at most typically just a few days away from dying. Now, they're very often having very diminished consciousness. In fact, the people dying may actually be unconscious for a prolonged period of time. And yet, over and over, the phenomenon has been observed where they suddenly seem to, the person dying suddenly seems to become alert, aware. It's as if they're looking up in their room. They may smile. And when they describe what they see, very often it is deceased loved ones that are coming to visit them. There may be lights, special mystical lights. There may be other spiritual beings that they encounter. Very often there's very positive emotional feelings by the dying person when all this is going on. It's essentially never frightening. Again, deathbed visions, like near-death experiences, occur in a relatively small percentage of the people dying, and yet it can be very, very positive experience for those that are dying. It seems to be preparatory. It seems to be helping them make that transition that is coming up very, very quickly for them to die physically and go on to an afterlife.
Do people who generally have more guilt when they die tend to have more deathbed visions than somebody who doesn't, for example?
You know, we haven't seen that. Deathbed visions seem to, we can't really predict based on anything about the person as to whether they will have a deathbed vision or what the content will be. Certainly people that have been guilty have had very beautiful, very transcendent deathbed visions. The religious do, the atheists do. It's one of these mysteries, a lot like near-death experience, where we just can't predict based on any characteristic of the individual what's going to happen during that deathbed vision. But as a group, like near-death experiences, they're almost always very beautiful, positive experiences, and certainly further strong evidence that there's an afterlife.
Well, I think what's so important, too, about your work, Jeffrey, is the fact that the distinct claim that an NDE is not a dream, hallucination, or any mental or psychiatric problem.
Oh, absolutely, and that's a very good point. Even the skeptics understand that these aren't dreams or hallucinations. They seem to be a very, very different special type of consciousness that goes on during deathbed visions or near-death experiences. And certainly if you ask those that have had, for example, a near-death experience, almost uniformly, almost 100% of the people that have actually experienced this after they've learned from their experience some years later will say yes, there's no question in their mind. What they experienced was absolutely real.
Have you found that some people who have an NDE are frustrated? They can't explain what happened to them?
No, that's a good point. One of the most common descriptions of near-death experiences is the term ineffable. And ineffable means that the experience is so complex, so different from anything that they've known in their earthly life that they can't find the words for it. Remember, we talked earlier about colors that defy description on earth, music beyond anything that they knew in their earthly life. I mean, this is literally so outside of their experience, so wonderful, so different, that words fail them. There just really aren't words in the English language or any other language to describe the power and the, if you will, the majesty of these experiences, especially when they're in the unearthly or heavenly realms.
The way someone gets an NDE, whether it's tragic or by some kind of medical procedure, does that affect it?
Yeah, absolutely none at all. It is astounding to me, George, in reviewing over 2,000 near-death experiences, the variety of ways people come close to death. We've had spider bites, lion attacks, hurricanes, trees falling, train, plane, car accidents, and yet throughout this huge variety of ways that people have that close brush with death, The content of the near-death experience when it occurs is absolutely the same.
So an NDE is an NDE.
Yeah, and that's what's so interesting. You know, you would think that there would be some way that we could predict what the content would be. You know, if it was, you know, say, for example, a accidental or suicidal overdose of certain medications, and yet they still have the same NDE. It's no matter what, even if it's under general anesthesia, even if they're a very small child, no matter what the religious background or lack of religious background. I mean, gosh, we've had near-death experiences in priests, ministers, atheists, the religious, people of all prior beliefs and cultural upbringing. And yet every single time when we look at these groups and the near-death experiences they have, the content is the same.
I'm fascinated by the discussions and the visions of this dark tunnel. Why do they have it? What do you think it is? Is it
sure? Early on, in many near-death experiences, probably a little over 25%, they encounter what's called a tunnel. Now, the interesting thing is stereotypically, the tunnel is sort of like a, you know, sort of a funnel shape, sort of something you pass through. And yet, in reality, for near-death experiencers, there's extraordinary variety in how they describe tunnels. They typically move at very high speeds through tunnels. There's often a light at the end of the tunnel that becomes brighter as they get closer to it. And again, we're talking about a mystical, unearthly light. While they're in the tunnel, there may be other beings with them. They may be interacting with other beings that are there. People have had life reviews while they're passing through the tunnel. So it's the tunnel is not just a single specific entity. It seems to be a whole variety of things that can happen when they're having the tunnel experience. I am wondering if the tunnel experience isn't some type of transitionary step or preparatory step for the near-death experiencer to pass from their ongoing earthly life. Very often they've had that out-of-body experience. They see their earthly body. They may see earthly events going on. But then through that tunnel on the other side, that's typically where they start to encounter those unearthly, beautiful, transcendent, heavenly realms.
Well, you know how we have, wormholes and black holes. I am wondering, scientifically, if these tunnels are that. And the fact that, you know, you can't see the spirit of someone in an NDE, what if they're actually traveling through these wormholes or black holes that are out there in space?
You know, George, that is a real interesting idea that you have there. You know, again, certainly we don't know about these tunnels, but very clearly the concept that these are powerful, they're moving very, very quickly like you would if you approached a black hole. The laws of physics don't seem to apply. For example, time has no meaning when you're in that realm, and that could well be as you approach a black hole. They're weightless. All that we know of our earthly life in terms of sort of the laws or the boundaries as to, you know, how we live our life and seem to be very, very different there. And certainly, as you pass through it and enter into an unearthly realm, certainly the concept of like a wormhole, black hole, something that serves as a physical, knowable, observable transition is certainly, you know, a very interesting speculation.
Do people generally come back from an NDE, Jeff, with better psychic powers, more alert, more tuned in?
Absolutely. That's one of the more common, if you will, after effects or how they change after the near-death experience. You know, I'll be straight up and admit this. When I started researching near-death experiences, I wasn't that much of a believer in psychic phenomena. And so I was startled as experience after experience piled into dozens to hundreds to now over 2,000. I simply can't ignore the evidence. There's no doubt people come back with increased psychic abilities as a group after their near-death experience. Probably the most common expression of that psychic ability is increased intuitive ability. These people seem to understand other people, be aware of them. They seem to be able to sense other people's emotional states much better. They can often have some sense about what the other person is like. We have near-death experiencers, and sometimes it's disconcerting where they can be aware of what the other person is like, good or evil, or if they've had a very difficult past life, their earthly life, or if they've had a very easy one. But sometimes it's very difficult for near-death experiencers to adjust to these types of special abilities that they've had after their experience and come to be comfortable with them.
Can we assume that everybody that is having an NDE has a choice to either come back or to move on to the other side?
You know, a lot of near-death experiencers have a choice during their experience, and some don't. And that's absolutely fascinating. Often near the end of a near-death experience, they may encounter what's called a boundary. You know, if they're with other beings in their unearthly realm and they encounter a bridge or a stream in front of the path they're on, I know from reading so many of these experiences, that's pretty much going to be the end of their experience. They'll stop before they cross that bridge or the barrier, if you will. And if there's other beings with them, there's very often a choice, a discussion about whether to return to their earthly body. Now, George, what fascinates me is people that have near-death experiences, their earthly life is, up until that experience, all they know. They have friends, family, loved ones. They may have had this life on Earth for decades, and yet the great majority of near-death experiencers, when they have that choice to return to Earth or not, they are so much feeling that they're at home on the other side. They really feel that connection, unity, intensely positive feelings. They feel that that's where they really want to be. That is, in a deeper sense than home, than we know of home on our earthly life. The great majority of near-death experiencers, remarkably, want to stay in that unearthly realm and separate from their loved ones on Earth.
Well, they want to have that feeling, but how many come back and they just say, it was so pleasant on the other side. I really didn't want to come back.
And that's the great, great majority. It's very difficult for near-death experiencers to make that decision to come back. And that's one of the really interesting sort of deeper messages of near-death experience. I mean, literally, the question is, why on earth would you leave heaven? And over, consistently in near-death experience accounts, the decision is that they have to come back to Earth, or actually they choose to come back to Earth because of important relationships on Earth, especially relationships with children, to learn more about love as a common reason they return, or to just, quote, learn lessons, unquote, lessons typically not specified, but they know that these lessons require an earthly existence, and they also know that they're very, very important. So we hear this a lot from near-death experiencers. And they often have a great deal of trouble after they return to Earth. Earth is full of hurt and pain and misery for so many people. It is so unlike the beauty, the joy, the peace, the harmony, the unity on the other side that often near-death experiencers will be depressed for a long period of time, unhappy that they left that earth, that beautiful, unearthly, heavenly realm. And that's a real adjustment reaction. Gosh, don't forget, George, they're trying to recover from what nearly killed them all at the same time, too. So quite a transition.
Those that experience an NDE, have you found whether they were more religious, more spiritual than somebody who didn't have one, for example?
Yeah, that's been studied very carefully. The religious or spiritual belief background of the individual does not predict whether they'll have a near-death experience or what the content will be. I mean, even atheists have near-death experiences. However, when you have a near-death experience, they do change. They do become more spiritual. They become more interested in spiritual things. I went for years doing my research and hadn't found a single person who was an atheist at the time of their near-death experience who remained an atheist. We now have, I think, two of them. But for atheists, the overwhelming majority cease to be atheists after their near-death experience. I mean, from their perspective, what they believed in all their earthly life, that God doesn't exist, that there is no afterlife, all of a sudden they have to say, hey, I lived this, I confronted it, I know it. And so they give up their atheistic beliefs almost uniformly.
Now that's amazing that happens like that.
It really is. I mean, that's a huge transition for somebody who, you know, where that's very much a part of their earthly life to be identified as an atheist and then have to have such an experience like a near-death experience and say, wow, guess what, friends, family, loved ones, you know, now I don't believe that anymore. I don't believe it because of the experience I had. You know, change, even change with such a powerful impetuous as near-death experience, a change in beliefs are difficult. And that's, you know, really tough for every near-death experiencer to make those changes. That's why it takes an average of 7 years for near-death experiences or near people that have had a near-death experience to fully manifest these powerful and lasting changes in their lives. It's, you know, change is that difficult.
If you could publicize this the best way you can, and you do a darn good job trying, I'll tell you that, what would you try to do to convince the population, convince the world that NDEs are real?
Well, you have to rely on other people sharing their accounts. You really don't want people to all have near-death experiences because that is indeed a close brush with death. I think if I could publicize this by sharing the research I've done that other researchers have done, Certainly by having near-death experiencers themselves share what happened to them and share it with the world, which is, you know, probably the most persuasive thing. If everybody in the world could hear of near-death experiences and what they're all about, the research behind them, and hear the accounts from the people that actually had them, I am convinced, George, that this world would change. This world would change for the better. That, like the near-death experiencers themselves, I think the people would understand that there really is that profound, powerful message of hope, that there's an afterlife for all of us, that our earthly life really is that meaning and full and significant, no matter how difficult it is. I think a lot more people would come to believe that that fear that they've had about what happens after they die is an unfounded fear, that there is an afterlife, a wonderful afterlife, and that seems to be for all of us.
Do their personalities change much when they come back? Are they more emotional? Do they cry? Do they get angry? Are they nicer? What happens to them?
You bet their personalities change. A very common thing that's observed after a near-death experience is that these people become more loving. They become more gentle. They become more compassionate. And they'll seek out other people for their friends, for their relationships that share these same values. And sometimes if they're in a job where they're not loving or compassionate, I mean, if they're trying to, you know, lie to their customers selling used cars, that may not be compatible with their new belief system after they've had a near-death experience. I mean, just imagine a world where everybody had that type of shift in values, less materialistic, more loving, more caring about other people, more willing to extend themselves to help out their fellow man. I mean, just think, if you will, George, what the world would be like if everybody had values like that and beliefs.
That's true. Tell me about the Near Death Experience Research Foundation.
Well, I was founded over 10 years ago. Now, we have a website, nderf.org, and right off the bat when we set up the website, we had a very detailed questionnaire. It now has over 150 questions in it. So we use some of the best and most scientifically validated questions to help us understand near-death experiences. So it's not just so much the huge volume of near-death experiences, we have over 2,000, but those 150 questions allows us to study near-death experiences in a depth that's just been almost impossible before. So our goal has been to study near-death experiences and share these important findings with the world. And goodness gracious, every month we get over 300,000 pages read on the website, so people are certainly paying attention.
How are NDEs treated abroad?
Well, Neil, that's really interesting. It was just this week I gave one of the first interviews in a South Korean newspaper that South Koreans have ever heard. My book that I previously published, Evidence of the Afterlife, but my research in near-death experiences was recently published in Korean. Now, this was interesting. They actually had a front-page article on it, and the feedback I'm getting is that in South Korea, near-death experiences are so unknown that it's very difficult for them to grasp that something so extraordinary like this actually is possible and actually is happening. And so I think it's going to take sort of repeated exposure, repeated awareness of the reality of near-death experiences. And certainly, you can't beat the courage of people that have actually had a near-death experience to share it with others. That's going to be sort of like what happened in America. Over a period of many, many years, more and more people are going to accept the reality of near-death experience in Korea and everywhere around the world. It's really all over the world quite variable. There's, you know, some countries where, like in America, over half the people believe that near-death experiences describe what will happen, or at least to a large degree, what will happen when we die. True for other countries, whereas other countries, typically with language barriers, less aware of the near-death experience research are not quite as much in line with believing near-death experiences as other countries.
What are shared death experiences? What's that?
You know, that's a relatively new area of research that came out. Interestingly, Dr. Raymond Moody was the first person to describe near-death experience in 1975 in his groundbreaking book, Life After Life. And just last year, Dr. Moody published his book about shared death experiences. And we'd all seen these experiences, all of us doing research. And by the way, his book's titled Glimpses of Eternity. But he was the first one to conceptualize that you could lump all of these into what we call shared death experiences. What a shared death experience means is that these are someone is dying, or say, for example, having a near-death experience, or saying a deathbed vision, and yet the person who is healthy, who is with them, if you will, shares in the experience. And these are very dramatic experiences, and certainly very evidential. I mean, the leading skeptic arguments about near-death experiences are you have a dysfunctioning brain, a dying brain, something's wrong. And that skeptic argument completely falls apart when you have a deathbed vision, someone's describing something, someone's going to the other side, that heavenly realm, and yet there's a person with them who's healthy, friend, family member, who's attending to them at the time they're dying, and they're sharing that experience. It's the two of them together going, having that out-of-body experience, having those positive emotions, encountering that unearthly realm. And of course,
all right, let's talk more about that, Jeffrey, when we come back.